What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care, so sit back, relax, and defocus.
We're back with the new Defocus Media podcast, and we have got a room full of optometrists here today. I'm here alongside Dr. Daryl Glover. Daryl, welcome to our show.
Yeah, how's everything been going, Jen?
Excellent, as always. I'm still loving motherhood and all that entails, but you know, I get hungry for these optometry discussions since I'm talking to a baby all day long. So I'm really jazzed about joining up with so many ODs tonight. So without further ado, we have two optometry guests with us this evening. Please welcome Dr. Jonathan DeCesco and Dr. Chris Lopez.
Hi, thanks.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks.
So we'd love, Jonathan, you've been on our show about 2 years ago now. So let's start catching up with how your career's been going so far.
Yeah, so I graduated from PCO Salus in May of 2017, and I'd been on active duty in the Navy before optometry school, and now I'm back working at a Navy eye clinic up in Connecticut. I really love it. It's an awesome job.
Let's talk about that mode of practice, because normally what we always talk about is private practice or corporate optometry.
Right.
I've never actually had conversation or dialogue with someone that's in the Navy or a military branch that's actually practicing optometry. So give us a typical walkthrough of how your day is.
Sure. So besides being an eye doctor, you know, seeing patients, doing primary eye care, I also have other responsibilities within the clinic as a division officer or assistant department head. Our entire department is about 60 personnel. So I have a little bit of a hand in radiology, pharmacy, physical therapy. You know, not that I'm working in those clinics providing care per se, but a bit of the oversight and management of that. So I like that variety of it. Really, the main function of the job is to keep, you know, sailors and other active duty military members, you know, healthy. We do a lot of preventive medicine. You know, a lot of the folks on our base, they're on a submarine, so we want to find problems before they go underwater 600 feet. Below miles out to sea, you know, before they pop up then.
And then Chris, would you mind introducing yourself to our listeners?
Yeah, Dr. Chris Lopez. Grew up in Southern California, right on the border, did my undergrad in Iowa and played football. And I graduated from University of Houston College of Optometry in 2018. So I've been practicing just over 1 year. Got a job up in upstate New York with a multi-office group OD practice. So actually, I was fortunate enough to have one of my classmates come up and join me too. So I think there's seven of us in one big office and one satellite clinic. And it's been going great so far, practicing full scope, doing a little bit of everything, you know, glasses, contacts, specialty lenses, peds, ocular disease, kind of a bit of everything. And it's been great. I love it so far.
Awesome. Well, I guess the million-dollar question is, how did you guys meet?
Yeah, it was actually through a Facebook forum. I had a few of these different entrepreneurial projects I was working on, and one that we'll talk about later. I specifically was looking for a co-founder. So I put out a call, you know, asking if there's anyone out there who has a little bit of a extra hustle to spare. And Chris was one of the folks who replied. And, you know, right away, I thought I just got a good vibe talking with him over the phone, you know, talking about the concept. And we've been running with it ever since. So yeah, we've actually never met. We've never met in person.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. This is great. So basically, like, using these forums that many of us are members of, you know, for a greater good, you found a colleague and a business partner through this.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Jonathan, we mentioned at the start of the show that you were on our podcast before, and back in 2017, we did an episode devoted to optopoetry, which was your collection of poems and artwork featuring other optometry students around the country. Well, you had updated me that that sold almost 600 copies, and what did you take away from that early experience in entrepreneurship?
Well, there's a few good lessons here. I think number one was that it really pays to ask or to speak up. Honestly, some of the best tips I got was from contacting Dr. Scott Lee. He's the optometrist who writes the Sight Gags cartoon. I saw that he had a book out. I asked him what his process was, and he told me about CreateSpace, which is this website where you can, you know, basically publish any book. It's now owned by Amazon. So OptoPoetry right now is still available on Amazon with Prime shipping because of that affiliation there. You know, it's not like I had to apply specifically through Amazon to get it listed there. So that was a great tip from him. I also had asked Dr. Ryan Corte. He introduced me to Dr. Janelle Routier from Essilor. That led to a sponsorship that really helped. I think it helped make the book as best as it could be you know, gave me some breathing room in the budget to put as much as I could into the artwork and make it as big as possible. Also asking Dr. Alan Glazer for help with promoting it and ODs on Facebook. Extremely gracious with, you know, getting the word out there. And even Vision Expo, they were, again, extremely helpful with, and when I was a student, they let me just have a table there to set up and kind of promote it. You know, selling a $20 book, I can't afford a $10,000 booth necessarily. But really just speaking up, that's, you know, big lesson number one, I would say, that we wanted to share tonight.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I mean, Jen and I, when we first started Defocus Media, you know, we really didn't know what direction we were going. I mean, we started off with doing social media for eye care professionals, their Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and things of that nature for the most part. Mm-hmm. But then it took a turn for being a podcast, and we ended up being the number one podcast in the world in eye care. Yeah. And, you know, we didn't imagine sponsorships, but then we were like, hey, let's ask for some money for, for a podcast. Yeah. And, you know, the power of asking really made a difference. And also the forums. We started posting our material and content on forums, and we got a lot of love, and it helped to grow the success that we have today. So I'm with you 100% in regards to being able to ask. I think it makes a world of difference. So Chris, tell us a little bit about your background and journey and being an entrepreneur.
Yeah, so like John said, we met on one of those Facebook forums and just kind of connected that way, hit it off. I thought it was the idea for iCare Market, the website we'll get into in a minute, was a great idea. We just kind of went into that. As far as other entrepreneurial aspects, when I was a student just a couple years ago, I started applying for jobs over the summer of fourth year. So, you know, about a year before I would actually start practicing, because, you know, you graduate, you have to apply for licenses. And as I was going through the job search, you know, it was crazy how unprepared we can be for that real world application of, you know, interviewing, negotiating contracts, and kind of all that goes into the job search. And so I learned a lot through that process. And I was like, man, this isn't anything that we're taught in school. So I got in contact with the administrators at the University of Houston. I was like, hey, you know, I think all this process that I went through, I learned a lot. I'd like to be able to share that with my classmates and the other students in the underclasses. And they thought it was a good idea. So I was able to get some sponsorship to put on kind of a short talk presentation to the students at the school, and it was well attended, and they got a lot of love, a lot of interest, and a lot of students asking me about the job search. So after that, I thought, well, maybe I can, you know, maybe there's a way I can monetize it. Maybe there's a way I can, you know, help more students in this way. So that's when I started Opticon. It's optometry student consulting. So pretty much I just help optometry students of any grade through any aspect of the job search. And, you know, it doesn't have to be fourth year when you're just applying to jobs. It can be anything, you know, resumes and CVs and how you can best put yourself in a position to succeed when it comes time to applying for jobs. And, you know, that has been going pretty well and pretty steady as well.
What's so amazing about both of you guys is how many great ideas you've been able to come up with in just a very short amount of time. So, I mean, Jonathan, we talked about optopoetry, but you've also working on a lot of different projects in addition to Eye Care Market, which we're going to talk about that you're doing with Chris. But right now you've got Ishii Prints going on, which is where you're making these custom Ishihara color style art prints, and you launched a Kickstarter campaign for that.
Right.
And then also an app that you've kind of been working on a patent with. So let's talk a little bit about Kickstarter campaigns, because that seems to be something that kind of was appealing to you this time around in the business.
Right. Yeah. With OptoPoetry, the campaign went really well. I think the goal was 3,000 and it raised 1,500 the first day. Ishii Prints did not work out so well. You know, I'm totally going to own the failure on this one, but the campaign's been going for about a month. It got, I think, 25% funded on the first day, and then hardly any action since then. And I really didn't advertise it a lot, you know, besides just friends and family. So to kind of explain to the listeners, this is a program where you can take the Ishihara style, you know, of those color vision testing plates and create any image. We can make a full-size poster. You could get a digital image download, you know, if you wanted to send a card to a friend. you know, I kind of tried to test it out, you know, asking people like, hey, what do you think of these? And the response was always like, wow, that looks awesome. Like, this is so cool. But then once I put it out there, it just didn't take traction. And I'm okay with that. You know, it's an art project, and everyone has their own idea of what looks good. And if people didn't want to buy it, at least not yet, then, you know, that's it for now, you know. But I'll still keep working on it. It's still up there on ishiprints.com. So I think it might just need a bit retooling in the marketing, perhaps, you know.
Well, we're going to put a link companion article here to go along with the podcast. So you guys make sure you go check it out.
Okay. Thanks.
The other big thing that you've been working on, and we're not going to go into too much details on this because it's not a final product yet, but an app that you're calling iReliever, which has to do with the 2020 kind of computer recommended blinking rule. You had to apply for a patent for this. So what was it like as far as patent filing goes?
Right. This actually was an interesting process. It's been going on for about 3 years now. And just about a month ago, I got notice from my patent agent that the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office has accepted the critical parts of this. So don't have the official patent number yet. It's not public. So again, I'm going to kind of keep that hidden for now. But one of the things I also wanted to discuss is how with entrepreneurship, there's a lot of barriers to entry, and one of them is protecting things like intellectual property. You know, actually filing for a patent isn't that expensive, but getting patent attorneys, then that's a lot of money. So I actually worked with this patent agent. His name is Brad Fosh. He runs patentfile.org. I'd highly recommend him to anyone. If you have some invention, some idea, eye care related or not, super easy to work with. The rates, I think, are reasonable. It's not going to be too cheap. It's going to run a few thousand dollars, but his office put out a really good product. It was really helpful as it, you know, this process went through the USPTO timeline, you know, submitting all the deadlines. So again, it's very close to being finalized. Hopefully more to come on that in the year ahead.
How did you know that you needed a patent with the idea that you were creating here? I just wonder when people realize like, oh, this property, this is something I need to protect.
Right. So I don't know if I need one, but I wanted one, I guess partly because this app, I see this as a consumer facing product where my goal is to eventually elevate eye care in the public consciousness. So getting that 20-20-20 rule, I think that's something that anyone walking down the street, since everyone's staring at phones and computer screens for a job or on their own time, everyone should know this, just the way they know they should brush and floss every day, just the way we know, you know, to be healthy, we should eat well and exercise. So this app hopefully will make things better for, you know, eye doctors to tell the 20-20-20 rule to their patients. And I think it has enterprise level benefits. So I didn't want, you know, some major optical chain to see this and say, hey, we like that. And they have the money and resources to just copy it overnight. So this is my attempt to protect that intellectual property, essentially.
You know, I wanted to circle back on the financing of this. I mean, mm-hmm. I've discussed, you know, patents with other folks and mm-hmm. they were telling me, you let me know if this is true or not, since you have more knowledge about it. But like you had mentioned, you know, getting it is not expensive, but I understand keeping it is where that expense actually kicks in. I understand that's a pretty hefty fee that you have to pay, I think, on an annual basis. Is that true?
Well, I'm not sure about the annual basis. It's there are filing fees, probably around $500, $750 for what's called a micro entity. So that's any individual inventor, entrepreneur, whereas large corporations, they probably pay fees in the thousands of dollars annually. Where it could get pricey is if someone were to actually challenge you in court. Then, of course, you know, a major company with a team of lawyers would be very intimidating to go up against. But even just the application, that costs several thousands of dollars because there's so much detail that has to go into even the language of the patent. Reading this thing, it's still even kind of confusing to me. It's not just the way someone would normally write or talk. You have to cover all the bases, try and cover every iteration or what they call embodiments of an invention, and just a way so you can cover everything that someone could do with that.
So let's talk about your project that has launched with Dr. Lopez here, Eye Care Market. What is Eye Care Market and why should we be so excited about it?
Yeah, well, Eye Care Market's, we really wanted to serve as a sort of comprehensive resource for the eye care industry. You can kind of think of it like a virtual exhibit booth, like John alluded to earlier. And the trade shows at the conferences, they're great, but, you know, they only last for a few days and not everyone's always able to go. And sometimes you can feel like you're missing out. You're not able to see all the exhibits. So with Eye Care Market, we have all that content and all that information you could ever want, anything eye care related, just at the click of a button. So you can almost like you can view a trade show virtually from the comfort of your home. So we really want to simplify that process and make it as convenient as possible for anyone in the eye care industry.
I like this concept. This is very interesting. I want to talk about this a little bit more. I mean, I'm going to give you my perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, whenever I look at something online, whether it's shopping or shopping or looking at a service, I like to actually look at it online, research it online, and then go to the store and buy it instead of purchasing it online. Same thing with eyewear. I'll look at something online, i.e. maybe a virtual trade show, but then I'll go to a conference and actually purchase what I need for my office or whatever it is that I may be looking to acquire. Do you guys feel like you're going to run into that problem with this virtual trade show, or do you have something that can really get the consumer's attention that they'll make a purchase or whatever service you may provide, they'll actually hold on to it? I mean, like, how are you going to combat things of that nature for the most part?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, we really see eye care market as complementary to a live trade show, you know, something where someone who is going to a conference in the near future, they might want to go to eye care market, kind of research what's out there, do some groundwork essentially. But we're not doing anything where we're taking sales. We're not a middleman on any products. You know, we're not moving eyewear or equipment. We just want to get ideas out into the marketplace more freely or more easily. You know, there are paid listings on there, of course, but we think that by doing this, it's an easier way to reach a larger audience. You know, the folks who don't have the time or money to go to all these conferences. And again, on the vendor side, it's very expensive for them to exhibit. You know, all that ad and booth space costs a lot of money. So we think if we can offer them a good option to get it out at a fair price, you know, they'll see a positive return on investment on getting those impressions out there.
You know, where I see this really being successful and very productive for eye care professionals to look at is if you're actually simulating some type of machine, you know, whether mm-hmm. it's OCT or, you know, some type of new instrument that may be out or tool out where people can actually watch how it is actually utilized or how you actually use the machine. And I think people will really flock to that because everybody wants to learn how something works. But the one thing I know when I go to a trade show, I don't have time to do that. You know, I just want to go in there and get the product and I'll try to sit down and watch it. But if I can touch and feel it, that'll definitely, you know, expedite the process of me doing that one thing and moving to the next. So I see something like that really taking off with what you guys have going on.
Yeah, that's our hope. Again, people can learn about what's out there and then go to that company either at a trade show or through their vendors and close the sale.
Jen, what's your perspective? I would love to get your view in regards to your thoughts of this.
I love this idea. One, because it's so simple. You know, I think the very best ideas are so simple in their origin. We need to be able to, at any moment, let's say it's 3 a.m. on a Sunday, and we're thinking about, gosh, I don't know what EHR I want to look at this upcoming show. Like, we need a place, like an Amazon review section to get the brain mm-hmm. at least thinking about, well, who do I want to sit down with and like really delve into their product live and in person? Yeah. You know, there's so many different options for most of our instrumentation, for most of our software systems out there. And you could spend your entire trade show experience at 3 different booths if that's, you know, you had to make a purchasing decision. Well, it'd be much better if you came in with a ton of the research, a ton of the talking points down already, and then just be able to, you know, see what kind of promotions are going on and get more of an overview while you're at the show. So I love the concept of maximizing your time at the show by doing your homework beforehand online. And I also think it's a great option for small vendors. I mean, you mentioned when you were launching OptoPoetry, Vision Expo was so generous as to give you booth space without that, mm-hmm. you know, $10,000 cost that it would cost to have a booth. And for small groups, optometry student-led, young OD-led groups that are trying to get the word out about a concept or idea that they're putting out there, you know, having a place online for other ODs to learn about them and support them is a wonderful thing. And hopefully that company that's a little startup will be successful enough to be able to have the more expensive booth space later on. But somehow you got to get that little kick jump to get sales to a point where you can afford a $10,000 boost.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
So what's your 1-year goal, 5-year goal, 10-year goal with this business? Because I think this will really move in our industry.
Yeah. Me and, John and I kind of discussed our goals and our plans for this in the future and grow it organically and, ads and sponsorships for the website and really do all that we can to make it a one-stop shop for eye care. And just that we want it to be that one comprehensive site where you can just find all the information there.
Yeah. And honestly, Daryl and Jen, there is no financial goal with this. We, even in all the planning that we did, we never said this is the number we have to meet to be successful or to be happy. Honestly, in this process, one of the big lessons we've learned is just the way websites have become very accessible to make. I'm not a techie guy. I don't know how to code, but the site that you see now maybe isn't as amazing as other sites out there, but I think it's pretty darn good. And that's all done through Wix. I'm sure other listeners have heard of Squarespace and WordPress. Any budding or aspiring entrepreneurs out there, I highly recommend just going on one of those sites, making a website. Yeah, that's been a very educational process just for ourselves. I feel like, I'm better prepared to be a doctor. If I'm in a private practice situation in the future, I feel more comfortable making my own website. So, I guess going back to the original question, our goal is to be a place of engagement where ideas are shared freely and easily. And really, there's no dollar amount tied to it.
Yeah, and it kind of goes back to the idea. Me and John discussed this when we were starting this, but everyone defines success differently. And of course we want to be successful, but like John said, we didn't have a set dollar amount, but I guess one way to look at it is if we're investing all, a bunch of our time and this entrepreneurial venture becomes, starts to feel like a drag or not worthwhile, then it's probably not worth it. But, if you're investing time, making a little bit of money and you're having fun doing so, then, there's no reason to stop. And
right.
Well, the key thing that you guys have to look at is, when you solve a problem, everything else works out on its own. You guys are really solving a problem for folks that can't make it to, a small, medium size, a large conference by giving them this platform where they can look at a potential instrument, a potential service, a potential platform, and answer all the questions that they may have about that product or service. So I think in the long run, you definitely will see some dollars follow. It's no doubt about it.
Well, we'll see. It's all an experiment.
Chris, you sound so much like me when you were saying like, hey, this is like, I'm an OD. That's my job. That's my career. Anything I'm doing on the side is for fun. Like, it's just got to be fun. And the day it stops being fun is the day I stop wanting to do it. And Daryl will probably laugh. He's heard me say that so many times when it relates to Defocus Media as well, because like, we're all in the grind all day long. And these sort of things that we're doing in our free time, it's got to feel rewarding and it's got to feel like fun to do it. And I think that's the real spirit of being an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's why we've been so successful, Jen. It's just simply because we only do things that we have fun with. If it's not fun, if it's not exciting, if we don't believe in it, we do not endorse it. And, all the things all the companies you see that we work with, like Transitions, every one of my pair of glasses have Transitions, and the same with Jen. So we strongly believe in their products.
Nice.
Most of my lenses have the eyes and lens technology by Essilor as well. So we strongly believe in those products. We really talk about things that we use day in and day out in our practice, but also in our personal lives as well. So, if it's not right, it doesn't fit. If it's not fun, we're not going to do it. That is truly our mindset. But again, what happens with that being that we're having fun, money starts to follow because people can truly appreciate that authentic dialogue and the passion that we have about the things that we discuss.
Well, I'd love to have just like a roundtable with all of us about entrepreneurship in general. We're seeing a slew of student and new graduate ODs really making waves within this industry. And I don't think there's ever been a generation of eye care before where that was the case. Names like Matt Geller come to mind. Dimitri Richter, who does the op translate, for example. So there are a lot of people doing a lot of good work, sometimes even before they got their OD degree. What are some of the driving factors that you think have led to this wave of entrepreneurship in young ODs?
Well, I think, millennials, we get a lot of stuff nowadays. But one thing we don't get enough credit for is we're just entrepreneurial in spirit. And I think, you know, technology has made, you know, entrepreneurship more accessible, less expensive, and more, I mean, just easier to be able to do things and spread the word. And it helps also to have, you know, podcasts and resources like you guys, Daryl and Jen, to be able to have this platform to give, you know, entrepreneurial spirits an opportunity to spread the word about their ventures. So, and that's helpful.
Yeah. So I'm 38 years old right now. I was born in 81, and I've been heard that this, you know, people born in that year, they're part of what they call the Oregon Trail generation. So I grew up when the old Apple IIe computer was a big deal. You know, I graduated college in 03. You know, I had the internet in college, but we didn't have smartphone, mobile phone stuff. So obviously that explosion just in the last 20 years, it makes it possible. And I love that because it just opens up the doors for innovation. That said, we are concerned about, you know, with the current state of optometry, with schools being so expensive, there's so many students who come out with this, you know, what feels like a crushing debt load. You know, part of the reasons we wanted to come on today was to kind of give them hope that, hey, there's definitely ways that you can, you know, even in the face of all this debt, there's ways to get ideas tested, you know, prove out, you know, business models, and get things going, you know, with whatever it is you have, whether it's an invention or a forum or whatever it is, you know, a book you want to write.
You know, I agree with you about that being both a pro and a con. I think the crushing student debt has made the path to practice ownership feel more daunting to our generation of doctors. You've got, you know, that debt and to go into more debt to buy a practice feels very difficult. Plus the fact that optometry practices are selling for much more money than traditionally they would have been worth due to that influx of private equity money coming in. So even if you didn't feel like you were in too much debt to buy a practice, buying an existing practice probably priced out for you. And so you're looking at a cold start, which has its own like level of fear associated with it. But it doesn't mean that we don't want to own our own businesses, right? Like it's practice ownership feels really difficult right now for many new graduate students. But a startup of a business where they could do all the research themselves, create their own website, create their own product, that seems much more obtainable, especially growing up in this culture where if you don't know how to do something, you just watch a YouTube video and you figure it out. Like we're also used to being able to figure out anything we want to online.
Right. Yeah. Jim, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, what might have cost you tens of thousands of dollars to do in the past, you can literally go on YouTube, put it in the search bar, and figure it out within 5, 20, 15, 30, whatever amount of time it is, and you'll be a master at it. I mean, like everything is at your disposal, and just that it's free just makes it even more feasible to make happen. So I agree with you 100% in regards to that. I mean, that's basically how we started Defocus Media.
Nice. How to create a podcast search.
Yeah, like literally that's what we did. We put it in the search engine. We looked at it. We saw the different platforms. We played around with certain things. We asked people, you know, Jen came up with the software that she spoke to with one of her colleagues at work. And
thank you, know, Dr. Marina. Shout out.
Yeah.
Nice.
And, you know, I played around with, you know, the software I had on my computer and Googled everything else. And like, literally, that's how Defocus Media was created. I mean, we pivoted from what we initially started with doing social media for eye care professionals.
Right.
But in my opinion, it was the best pivot that we ever made in our life.
I was going to say, if it's okay, if we ask you guys a question about that, you know, as you're part of this, you know, young generation of OD entrepreneurs, you know, as you're, I'm sure you're able to learn a lot, you know, as you do the YouTube search and learn how to create a podcast, what were some of the even technical hurdles that you ran into? Like, did you ever have an episode where you got to the end, you're like, oh no, we didn't record anything, like any issues like that, that you ran into?
I think the biggest issues that we ran into was just poor audio, you know, in the early stages. We would have guests that would say, hey, I'm out at a hotel and I can record with you guys.
Right.
But what we learned is hotels, internet is the worst.
Yep.
You know, and we would get this audio back that just sounded horrible and it was missing some of the content. And, you know, that would be a podcast that was like an hour long. And we're like, man, we just wasted an hour of our life. What are we supposed to do now? You know, you can't get that time back.
Right.
But I think, you know, things of that nature, just poor audio due to poor internet connection. Also just people, you know, you can't put your trust in people. People tell you they're going to do something and they're not going to do it. You know, the only person I could put my trust into is myself and Jen, because we're going to hold each other accountable. But, you know, we've had guests that have, you know, told us they was going to do a podcast, and then next thing you know, they can't do it. We got to reschedule, and, you know, that can jam us up. And, you know, it's just, you know, those are the main hurdles that I see. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, obviously technical difficulties frustrate everybody, but that's one of those things where you just kind of have to roll with the punches, right? Like, anybody who is joining us to do this podcast, we're just, you know, doing it to support each other and for fun. So if we run into technical difficulties, I kind of view it as like, no big deal. We'll hit you up later, or we'll do this another way. I remember one of our very first podcasts, Errol, was with Sir Oliver Goldsmith, and he did not know how to get Google Chrome on his computer. You know, like, he just could not, he didn't know how to download a web browser. So it was like their first big guest, and we couldn't even like get an internet connection. But you know what? He got like a grandkid or something involved, and he got the internet, and we were able to record.
And it was one of our best podcasts ever. I mean, he's a more seasoned person, I should say.
Right.
But, you know, the Oliver Goldsmith brand is phenomenal. I mean, I think it's been around since like 1926 or something like that. And every generation, one of the kids keep the same name, and they keep it pushing, and they have beautiful, beautiful, beautiful eyewear that just, you know, you've seen on the likes of some of these older celebrities in Hollywood. You know, what are some of the names, Jen? Remind
me. Yeah, I mean, he did Princess Diana's glasses, for example. And yeah, so just amazing stuff.
Yep.
I would love to kind of go around with all of us, and because you had mentioned earlier about using Wix to build your website. And I think all of us, because we have been building these businesses, probably have a few tips about website design or software, things that we found to be great tools to build a business. And so, like, what's an insider tip? Chris, why don't we start with you?
I'd say really just taking the time to get familiar with everything the programs have to offer. I mean, you could spend hours going through Wix and still not go through half of, you know, the capabilities of what's available on the website. I think probably another tip that John and I were kind of going through doing the website is not everything is going to be perfect. And I think sometimes you have to be okay with that. You can spend entirely too much time just trying to, you know, get all the indentations right, or the spacing right, or the text right. And soon it comes to a point where, you know, you can spend hours tweaking something or just getting more actual work done.
Yeah, there's a saying in entrepreneurship that if you're not embarrassed by the first product that you shipped, then you waited too long. It's almost like you need to get it out there, get feedback from an audience, from customers, even with all its, you know, warts and all, you know, and then from there you can iterate and improve and make adjustments. So, and that's the beauty of, you know, the website. We can go in, change it right now, and 5 minutes later it's fixed. Yeah. Other tips, you know, in terms of creating the site, I would say that you can do almost anything that you imagine. So don't feel like, oh, I want to do this, but, you know, they don't have that function. I guarantee it somewhere, somehow, some developer can get it done. And I say that because it allows your imagination to kind of expand and say, hey, anything is possible. You know, just the technology is really there now. So,
yeah, I think the main thing for me is just choose your battles. You know, there's certain technical aspects of the website that I do not care to learn. I do not care to do. And I don't have the time commitment to make happen. So I have a team member that I can reach out to and tell them to fix certain things. But, you know, the basic things as far as structure, getting the content up and things of that nature, I feel perfectly comfortable with doing it. I actually enjoy doing that type of stuff.
Yep.
But there's certain things on the back end, way on the back end, that I have no clue about. And again, I'm not going to invest my time into it. And I'd rather pay someone else to do it, because I don't enjoy doing that. And I don't have time to go on YouTube or Google to research for several hours. So I think, you know, just choosing the right battles makes a big difference in regards to creating the ultimate website.
I'm going to throw it, because many people who might be listening to us, I've noticed there's been as far as being your own business, being on Instagram, being a brand ambassador, that seems to be a very popular route for young OGs to be taking right now in entrepreneurship. So
specifically for people who are doing more of a social media minded business, have a media kit. I never had a media kit for, and I, you know, have been blogging with Idolatry for like, since like 2011, and I didn't even know what a media kit was. And then started working with Daryl and realized like, oh shoot, like that's what I was missing. I was never treating what I was doing like a business because I never provided analytics. I never gave statistics. I could get all those numbers very easily with, you know, your Google Analytics, just plugging your website in and signing in with your email. But I never put it together to show people that were interested what I was doing and what my reach was. So if you guys are trying to use your social media to brand yourself as an ambassador for the profession, pull some stats together about what you're doing and put it in a nice, pretty package. And I love using Canva for the media kit. It looks really great.
Nice.
Yeah. And I think that's a huge thing, Jen, just the power of analytics. You know, I mean, number one, it's going to blow your mind how many people you're reaching. But, you know, those potential sponsors, partnerships, collaborations, I mean, that's what they're looking for. And these people don't play. They want every single number, every single value. I mean, everything that you have on the back end, they want. Am I lying, Jen?
Yeah. You know, Instagram stories, and only data stays for 14 days, all right? So you got to make sure you're on top of your Instagram stories data because it won't be there to pull in like 3 months. All right. Well, as always, if you guys are listening and you have specific questions for us or any of our guests, I mean, hit us up at Instagram or on the website. But we'd love to get your contact information. Let's plug iCare Market a little bit, if you guys wouldn't mind sharing the details there.
Yeah, iCare Market. It's just, the URL is just what you would think, iCareMarket.com, I spelled EYE. And on there, you can see our contact page, you know, sign up to be a member on the site. It's totally free. That gets you access to some of the jobs and other equipment for sale listings.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast. And remember, we keep it 2020 around here. Pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.